rock into an interview in your pajamas and you lose your job, right?
Because you're a chilled out type of person. And
The entire idea of dressing in a certain manner to attend an event or to go to an interview or to just go to work or whatever, that is communicating something. So I'm thinking that these days, it's all right, mate, don't get me wrong, I'm generally fairly relaxed, but it is the case that when I'm doing Brain Food Live, I'm always wearing this white shirt because it's kind of just like mentally I've got to get the right place, but I'm also trying to communicate something. I'm not quite sure what. Anyway, we're live. We're live, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 98. We're bringing it to you every Friday. And it's going to be a super exciting show today. A little bit of a change of pace because we're actually going to be talking about, I think, quite a challenging topic. And it's probably something we've all got some sort of angle on or some sort of experience on. But I think we have vastly different experiences also that I want to tease out and explore, and that is the dark side of LinkedIn. Anyway, before we dive into the topic, I just wanted to firstly do some sound checks. Let's make sure everyone can hear me okay. So on Crowdcast, if you can hear me okay, please say hello in the chat stream. We are multicasting, and I think we should be out there on LinkedIn. I hope so. I'm never confident on this. I see blank screens whenever I check. If you can hear this on LinkedIn, just give me a like, dislike, or whatever those new emojis are. Let me know you can hear me okay. And on Facebook, we are out there on the group. So if you can hear me there, give me a like, dislike, tell me, get on with it. It's all fine. Okay, we're getting some people. I think at least one audio is working all right. And I believe LinkedIn is okay. Yes, Charles, thank you very much. We're okay on LinkedIn also. And relevant because we're talking about LinkedIn. Anyway, welcome back to Adam Gordon. Really great to have you back in the hot seat, Adam. Missed you last couple of weeks, mate.
Oh, I think it's only been a week I've been away. You didn't say that when I was away for about 5 weeks. So that saying the absence makes the heart grow fonder.
It was a holiday. Yeah.
Wrong.
How you been anyway? You been all right?
Yeah, very good. Good week. And actually, I managed to take the morning off work.
Good. I'm pleased to see you taking some time for yourself a bit more, actually, last couple of weeks, it seems. It seems that that's prioritized a little bit for you, which I think is very, very good and necessary.
Well, I climbed a hill in Glasgow this morning. Just, quite a big one, but it's in the city.
So. Just for the hell of it?
Yeah, just for a bit of exercise.
It's hard work, mate. If you're not used to hill climbing, oh my goodness, it's difficult. There was a hill called Rosebery Topping in Yorkshire, which is the highest hill in north of England or something. By the way, this is like a tiny hill. Me and my mate decided to climb it. Holy crap. I was pathetic. Like, all these grannies were overtaking me. I had to take so many rests and all the rest of it. And I realized how unfit I was. By doing that, I was like, I need to A, get fit, lose weight, all the rest of it. This is a couple of years ago, of course. No fit.
Yeah, no, I got all of those today because I've got a certain, there's a specific way that I do exercise, and that is either it's a team sport, which of course we can't do unless you're elite, and I'm not elite, or I pay a considerable amount of money for David Lloyd. And of course, it's been shut as well, so I've not been able to do that. Just going and sitting on a treadmill in the basement is not something that's good for me.
No, dude, I'll tell you where I'm getting fit. Oculus, this thing here.
Me you're playing tennis.
I'm playing a game called Beat Saber, which is essentially you've got lightsabers. You got lightsabers and you're there to smash these things that come at you to music. Wow. But it's very exciting, very immersive, and actually really good exercise. It's like you get a proper sweat on. So yeah, if anybody's in Beat Saber and in the Hoxton area in London, give me a game because I'm like expert plus now and I reckon I'm pretty high standard. Anyway, let's move on to the topic at hand. Before we do that, we're going to go and, oh crap, we actually need to promote the company who's sponsoring this. I totally forgot. Sorry, Kelly Services. This is how out of shape I am in terms of how to do this. But essentially, Kelly Services are our sponsors today and they are doing some amazing work. Obviously, if you know Kelly, they're one of the most famous businesses in our recruiting space. They are a RPO, they are a multi-service business, They do all kinds of recruitment related work that's super interesting. And we're going to be talking a lot about Kelly and the work they do at enterprise level, because a lot of the stuff we do is tend to be smaller scale. But they're talking about, you know, big support to governments, multinational organizations, stuff like that. So Kelly Services, definitely a business you should check out if you're operating at that level. Okay, let's go to the newsletter, man. What was interesting last week, dude?
Can I just quickly say something? I never comment on sponsors, and I don't like all recruitment agencies, but I actually really do like Kelly Services as well. And I'm not paid to say that at all. Right, what was in the newsletter? So the first thing that's very exciting for me is the BBC's dramatization of the term spy pixels.
Yes.
As if people are actually sitting, like, trying to work out information about you that they can then do something with. That's not what's happening. So spy pixels are endemic in email, I think was the headline, something like that. And it's all this... The topic effectively is when you open an email, the chances are that the people who sent it to you might know if you've opened it. They might know if you've clicked a link. They might know what link that is. They might know where you've then gone. If it's on a landing page, they'll know what you've done there. If it's on their website, they might know what you've done on there. Welcome to marketing automation. That's all it is. It's been on the go for 20 years now. It's very, very big. Marketo is a huge company. HubSpot's a huge company. Every single B2B organization on the planet basically does it. The internet is based on pixels and pixel tracking. So if we want to get rid of it and stand up and go, don't track me, then we're going to end up back to Alta Vista, where practically nothing on the internet is relevant for you. And so it was a interesting article, interesting to see the way people think. And it is going to it may well create change in the way we do things. So, you know, we've had GDPR, we've had PECR, we've had other things happen. And I know that there's certain browsers that are making changes around the way that pixels and cookies are going to be deployed.
Not only certain browsers, Google are going to do it. So it's
they are, but they're going to make services. They're going to make plenty of their services off, like, ineligible to you if you don't click yes on certain things. And it's the same way that we can see Microsoft are going to start charging for, I can't remember what they call it, the new suite, but they're going to start charging for, like, all of these services that we kind of taken for granted. And, you know, companies, software companies have to make money. And I know I'm talking quite long here, not a long time about this one, but that documentary on Netflix, The Social Dilemma.
Adam Curse.
I mean, there was nothing new in that whatsoever, nothing at all. However, it took the subject to a much bigger audience who suddenly became aware of it, which I'm really surprised about, but it's elevated the subject.
The question is are we taking data privacy too far? In the sense, it's becoming like almost red under the bed type of feeling about it. And you think, actually, a lot of the things are being tracked, and generally speaking, it's not nefarious. I mean, I'm a big believer in ad tracking, to be honest with you, because I'm old enough to remember the days when the internet was just a blizzard of irrelevant crap. And these days, when you're going onto various websites, you have to consent to this and consent to that and block this or block that. And it's becoming, feeling-wise, a very similar type of situation. You have to batter through certain things in order to get to your content. Well, guess what, folks? You know, when the internet was, you know, pre-really the ad tracking era, it was what was happening. The response of advertisers who couldn't accurately target their audience was to simply go mass volume and simply crank out more. So it was a really interesting article by the Beeb. I don't think the news media is not helping to a large degree with this degree of alarmism, but they're basically saying that, ads are bad, but also these pixel trackers in email are bad. It's just spyware. And, you know, but I can see that argument sort of building steam in an irrational way, because people do feel like they intruded upon. We have to recognize that's a sense of feeling that's valid. And they map that to a horror story they may read, which might be a 1 in 10 million type of horror story. And then they extrapolate that globally. And then suddenly everyone's got like a broken experiences in every single thing. Relevant also to brain food, by the way, folks, because bear in mind, actually it isn't, because basically everyone's opt-in and I don't do any targeting. So I think brain food is generally going to be safe-ish as a business, simply because I don't provide that type of a forensic, hey, target British people or whatever. But at the same time, it's still kind of an attack against the idea of better understanding the people that you might market to. And it strikes me that that's kind of ultimately not a bad thing, to better understand your customer. And in fact, I struggle to understand why that's different from personalizing something. You know, if I was to pitch you one-to-one, then you would appreciate that I found out your name was Adam, at least, and I didn't DSR you an email. Why is that a negative thing? I've done some research. I've tracked a little bit. Maybe I find out you're Scottish and you're interested, you support Rangers. I find that out, you'd probably think, okay, that's pretty good. But if I do that in some automated way, apparently that's spying. So we need to have an ethical conversation on this, folks, because we're on the road to making decisions that will ruin the internet. Okay, moving on. Give us something else, Adam. What else was interesting last week?
Well, I really liked the – and tell me what I've missed in this, because I really liked the headline for the article on – I think it was on Indeed about European cities and remote hiring and things like that. And I went into it and I read it and I was just a little bit disappointed that there wasn't anything new. It was – all it said was there's more people in big cities who are working remotely. There is a continued inequality between, you know, the people working in high paying jobs in big cities versus outside. It said that the rate of adverts for tech jobs is still below pre-COVID levels, which is not that surprising. But was there something I missed in it that you thought was particularly exciting? Because I was trying to find it.
No, I thought it underlined some really interesting things, which was the conversation on remote working is predominantly taking place in big metropolitan cities.
Yeah.
Which is a paradox, because you think it's like work anywhere. Why is that? But then it becomes obvious that the reason why this is important is because big metropolitan centers had previously attracted an overwhelming number of knowledge workers. That's where the center of the offices were based there. And the dispersal of these workers is now what the challenge is. Whereas if you're working in a second tier, third tier city, no, people are not necessarily having the same degree of conversation because there's less of those jobs of that type. It's more likely the key employer there is a factory or something that does require you physically to be on premise, for instance. So I think that was the main finding from the Indeed report, basically saying, you know what, the work from home and the versus remote versus on-premise, that's a hugely important conversation, but it's dominated by the metropolitan experience, very different on a regional basis, on a city basis, and presumably even more different from a international side as well. Anyway, cool report, very easy to digest. Yep. Go ahead and read it. Okay, what else, man?
The secret hiring experiment where Bavarian Broadcasting put some actors through some AI assessments, and they found that even though the same, you know, a change of appearance, change of lighting and background and things like that, it did make a difference to the results that were generated. First of all, what a beautiful website that they put this piece of content on. The way that, you know, it's not parallax. I don't know what you call that type of website, but it's quite a cool experience actually, just even going through it. But I mean, I don't think we in recruitment are going to be all that surprised that the way you look is going to, you know, be measured differently by AI as it will do by humans.
Well, this thing caused a huge amount of controversy, and by and large, people were condemning sort of the use of artificial intelligence, video interviewing. I think this is with the German tool called Rhetorio or something. I'd love to speak to them, actually, to see their views on this topic. But the bottom line is, it was like weird stuff. Like they you know, you put a headscarf on and suddenly it would rank you in a different way. Or you would actually have a bookshelf and, you know, the number of books that you'd put on your bookshelf would, you know, change your score, for instance.
Sorry, is that what you were talking about earlier? Right? I missed the link between those two things. Right.
I was complimenting Adam about his background, because obviously his missus has got a very good taste and understands the aesthetic appeal of how he's distributed his things. Whereas I've got a complete mess here, which needs to change because it damages my credibility on the AI. But anyway, this is actually a really important point because two things. Number one, there's an ethical issue about the use of AI in this way. Number two, though, it's also a case that very likely if the AI has learned this from human bias. In other words, it's tested it, but I think by a bunch of recruiters reviewing lots of interviews and then making scoring decisions on those, and it's piped that into a system to say, look, what happens if we times that by 10,000? And if for me, it just tells us that we do have to pay attention to things like lighting, background, audio quality, all of those things that, you know, previously we might have spent investment and time on buying a nice suit or something, you know, or looking good in person. We now have to actually invest a bit to look good on screen, and we can't casually do it in the same way in the ideal world sense. So yeah, interesting challenge for us there. Anyway, really good report. You should check it out. Okay, let's talk about the topic at hand, Adam, because we've got a bunch of really cool guests to bring on. And some of these stories are going to be difficult, of course. So it's one of these where I want to handle it sensitively. You know, this is not going to be a case of coming on and providing these sad stories. It's more a case of trying to understand how people's experiences differ on different platforms, particularly on LinkedIn. Now, I've been super fortunate because my experience of LinkedIn has been overwhelmingly positive. I can only think of maybe one or two examples in my entire time on LinkedIn where I can say I've had a negative experience where I didn't deserve it. And where I have deserved it is went back in my spamming days and I sent like 10,000 messages to people. Yeah, sure, I got a few F-offs, fair enough. But there's been one or two occasions where I think I've behaved okay, but I've been hit on, I've been like attacked, and I thought, okay, a bit strange. But that's like two in like 10 years. But anyway, before we go to it, Adam, I just wanted to get your experience. Like, have you ever encountered anything like this yourself? And if you have, can you give us an example of what kind of bad behavior that you've encountered on LinkedIn?
I mean, not personally, other than occasionally people being inappropriate in the way that they are conveying a point. If they want to disagree with you or they don't like what you've said and maybe they've, you know, added some swearing in it or they've been aggressive in terms of the type of language they've used. But I've never had anything that is like as extreme as some of the things that we'll probably be touching on today. I think that we've definitely got a different environment on LinkedIn compared to even just 3-4 years ago. And I think what's becoming clear is Facebook is not for friends, whereas LinkedIn's for work. You know, I think the social media is not defined quite like that anymore. So you do see things on LinkedIn that you maybe wouldn't have seen a few years ago in terms of the types of posts. You know, there's a lot more social things on LinkedIn now than there was. And at the same time, there's a lot more professional things on Facebook. Facebook group, you know, everybody thinks that professional conversation, you know, when LinkedIn groups suddenly became pretty crap, basically, everybody thinks that, well, that's all disappeared. They didn't. They just migrated to Facebook. Happened there. Yeah. So I think we have to bear in mind, like, there's no police other than the people that owns the social network. There is no police. So if you see somebody saying things that you think aren't appropriate, you can't say, this isn't Facebook, mate. You know, don't put that on here.
I would cite that as one of the instances where I have been policed for my inappropriate non-professional commentary on LinkedIn, but I kind of brushed that off because I thought, you know what, that person's making herself look silly there. And it's fine. But yeah, it's good that you haven't had some negative experiences.
I am not really a target for negative experiences. I think negative experiences are probably much more likely to be towards females, and possibly other people that sort of, you know,
this is what I want to talk about, because one thing that came true to me was that we all have different experiences, and what is the experience of LinkedIn for other people might be very different from what you or I would understand it to be. I've had a very vanilla experience on LinkedIn, like I say, minimal amount of negative activity, but other people might not do. And sadly enough, oftentimes that's associated with your identity or the way in which you present yourself. And that can, you know, draw all kinds of strange behavior, aberrant behavior, and downright terrible behavior. And I want to surface that out, because we need to be aware of it, essentially. So I'm not here to try and provide solutions or to say, you know what, how do we fix this? I'd be looking to have conversations on how we ameliorate it, for sure. But I think it's important enough to simply surface it out and say, look, this actually does happen. And it happens in this case to this type of person or this individual or this group of people more so than others.
I'm going to just say one thing, which I know not everybody's going to agree with me about this, but I'm just going to say it. I have seen a couple of times on LinkedIn, I've seen somebody outing a person who has sent them a message that's they felt is inappropriate, and I've looked at it and gone, that person sent you a private message and said they think you look pretty. You've then posted that online and are potentially ruining that person's marriage, career, life generally. And I think I'm conflicted about whether that's a appropriate response.
That's a really important point to make, and it's this idea of doxing private people, right? Private messaging. It's difficult. It's like really difficult, because what is appropriate? What is what is the right or wrong thing? Oftentimes, it's such a judgment call to make. And like you say, sometimes I remember actually a very famous episode on LinkedIn. It was like an old gentleman, I think, mentioned something about someone's appearance in a private message. It was a famous legal thing. I don't know whether you remember it. She just busted out and exposed that message and him. And unfortunately, I think he lost his job. He retired. He just exited from, you know, professional life. And it just like... Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. It's like it's plus his age as well. I just wonder whether, you know, again, without being ageist, but I just wonder whether someone who might be not very familiar with navigating a lot of this stuff, very new to the idea of social media, for instance, suddenly, you know, find these extraordinary circumstances occur. That is actually a form of bad behavior, I would say, when, you know, potentially you have an inappropriate response to, you know, a message or a comment or what have you. There's different ways in which that can occur.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking to Joe about this, because I'm looking forward to Joe's you know, to explain this a little bit further, because Joe said in the comments here that sexual predators should be called out. Now, I think there has to be a difference between sending somebody a message and saying, hey, I think you look pretty, versus sending somebody a message that is like overtly sexual, and, you know, saying something that those two things are not the same, or are they the same? This is why I'm conflicted about this.
Well, let's bring Joe on this. Here's the reality as well. There's also different jurisdictions will describe this differently. So another issue that's worth wrestling with is that LinkedIn is an international platform. Meaning you've got in sort of users from every different part of the world. They operate culturally differently, and they actually operate in different jurisdictions. So in other words, something that's okay to say or do in the UK might be a crime in a different jurisdiction. Doing it on this international platform. So one party is thinking that's okay, other party doesn't think it's okay, and you can have all of these things come to pass. Anyway, let's bring Joe on straight away. I'm going to try and... There she is. Joe, let's bring her on. I'm going to see whether we can bring on... if I can find her. Crikey, I can't find her. All right, we'll see whether Joe can come on first. There she is. Joe, hey. How are you doing? Can you hear us okay?
Yep, got you. You hear me?
Great, we can hear you fine. Joe, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Okay. My name is Joanne Lockwood. I founded Sea Change Happen about 4 years ago, and I describe myself as an inclusion and belonging specialist that works with organisations throughout the UK, Europe and elsewhere, advising on their D&I and inclusion strategies.
Fantastic. Joe, great to have you on the show. You're one of those that are kind of a repeat guest, so we haven't put you off since the last time you've been here. It's always great to have you here for your intelligent observations and your knowledge and also perspective. And I know that, you know, when we first launched the show, you and I had a quick chat about it online also, and you mentioned that this is an area that you've got some experience in, bad behavior on LinkedIn. I just wanted to give you a bit of space to say, you know, what has been that bad behavior? How would you describe it? And can you illustrate it a little bit for us?
Well, speaking through my lens as a trans woman, so two parts there, trans and woman, I've experienced common, not all the time, but often, inappropriate messages. I get a lot of, hey, how you doing, hun, type stuff on LinkedIn, on Facebook Messenger, on Facebook itself. And then if I don't respond, I get a, come on, what's up with you? And so it starts escalating, and almost like they become more and more annoyed that the less you respond. I've never had any appropriate images on LinkedIn as yet, but I have had chat ups and comments. And obviously when I go to their profile, I look at what they've been commenting on, and they're making inappropriate comments on many, many other women's profiles. So it's not just picking me out. This is kind of like a serial sexual predator or inappropriate behavior. What's going on? This person feels entitled to drop a comment on whatever profile they feel they want to.
There's quite a lot of aspects to this, and one of them is that the question mark about whether people are doing this with authentic LinkedIn profiles or whether they're just doing it for kicks, and they are not who, you know, they are masquerading as on LinkedIn. Second one is about if these people haven't had any kind of, they haven't worked in any I don't know the way to describe this, but they haven't worked in more of a kind of office type of environment where there is a slightly different culture. They may have had zero education around how you behave professionally. And then the third thing is, yeah, just scumbags.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I'm sure some of these people aren't professional users of LinkedIn. They are using LinkedIn as another platform in their portfolio of stalking. I'm sure of it. But I often get trolls on my LinkedIn posts. I write an article for the Scottish Herald, as you're probably aware. And when I wrote an article recently about the use of language and gender neutral language and being trans inclusive. And I picked up a troll on my LinkedIn post who started posting radical feminist anti-trans views all over this article, getting into debate with friends. I did report a few of the comments to LinkedIn and they got upheld and then removed. But this person still comes back like a bad penny every so often.
And that's a female, is it?
Yeah,
I mean, I have no idea. This person is known as Terry S. So they could be male or female. Their photograph is in unspecific, so I couldn't tell their gender from the profile. I suspect they're probably male. I suspect. They're in support of feminist views.
Let's go. There's a couple of things that I want to just draw us back on here. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to step in quite regularly on this one simply because there's so many potential bad behaviors. I just want to isolate them and just deal with them a little bit. Number one, there's the ID verification issue, because LinkedIn, as far as I'm aware, doesn't actually police that at all. Like, anybody can set up a LinkedIn profile. In fact, you can do multiple LinkedIn profiles if you want. I think that definitely promotes or at least gives the opportunity for bad behavior to really blossom, because there's no negative pushback to that. Like, I could invent a character, I could take a deepfake photo, stick it on somewhere and start like hammering people for whatever reason I may have. And that is, as far as the receiver is concerned, is a legit member of the community. So I think number one, platform level, there's got to be some way to verify. Otherwise, this thing will just continue to be an issue. Second thing is, Joe, you mentioned there was like, there's two things there that was interesting. Number one, you were getting inappropriate messaging, I assume of a sexual nature. So these people were interested in let's say, relations with you or in some way, some sort of intimacy. Yeah. And you did a bit of research and actually found that this individual was like literally sporadic everywhere with this. So in other words, potentially there's like mental illness involved here, right, as well, in the sense that some people really need help.
I wouldn't go that far to say it's mental illness, but they certainly have a predatory habit. I mean, I've been chatted up on eBay. So I was selling something on eBay. Someone didn't win. They wrote back and said, if the person who bought that item doesn't want it, I'll go in second. And then I said, okay, thank you. And the next thing I get is, you look hot. Any chance we could go out for dinner? I thought, this is eBay. I'll probably be selling a canoe. And you want to chat me up.
It's like, that's really interesting psychology. It amazes me. Like I say, this is part of the reason why I wanted to do the show, because I don't get this. I think as a male presenting person, I'm not going to receive a huge amount of this. But I think women or female presenting people certainly get a different experience. A lot of guys aren't aware of this. And actually, from a recruiting
point of view, I woke up to this. Over the last 4 or 5 years, I woke up. I moved into this environment that I'd never experienced in my old life. Completely.
So post transition, you can actually comment on that. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I want to just underline this one point. It's super important from a practical point of view, because a lot of us are recruiters watching this show. When you're messaging people and you're kind of trying to get engagement and stuff of this type, like, bear in mind the people that you're messaging may have very different experiences of LinkedIn or online communication in general. And so you have to be sensitive to that aspect of things as much as anything else. Okay, Joe. The another thing you mentioned I want to sit on a little bit, which is this idea of you posting something publicly, and then it sounds like you've acquired like a nemesis, like someone who's tracking you around and popping at you. Yep. Whenever you are doing so, like this individual, male or female, maybe has perceived now a situation where it's fighting some sort of ideological conflict, and the requirement there is to constantly confront you with this.
Oh, completely. They've tracked me down on Twitter. They retweet my content with negative remarks, and then a swarm of other people join in from their hive, if you like. I get swarmed on by a few people. LinkedIn, I'll get a couple of followers and start jumping in. It's almost like there's an advanced army of detectors, and then everybody else piles in with the negativity.
They just
cut and paste links and cut and paste memes and cut and paste sort of standard tropes. They're not trying to get into a debate. They're just trying to shout and graffiti back at you with the standard stuff. So, as I say, I tend to just delete it after about 5 or 6 hours, because I want the people who are engaging with the post to see the kind of comments I'm getting back. I don't want to hide it. But then after time, I then want to just bin it once it's been seen, sort of thing.
Joe, what's the difference on LinkedIn? Is LinkedIn worse or not as bad as other social networks? How does it compare?
Well, LinkedIn, most posts are public by default. So I guess if I'm hashtagging trans, hashtagging LGBT History Month, hashtagging inclusion on my post, people who are trolling can search those hashtags looking for when they pop up. Whereas on Facebook, I don't tend to hashtag. And okay, most of my posts on Facebook are public. I don't put anything private these days. But I think LinkedIn is just more searchable with the hashtags, just by the way I post.
You know what? Just for people's knowledge here. So I think what Joe's referring to is kind of known as dogpiling. So in other words, there is basically an organized group, usually like people are politically motivated for whatever reason, whatever dimension it might be. They think they're fighting an ideological war. And whenever they identify an enemy, quote unquote, they will rally everyone around and like dogpile that person, meaning like multiple tweets, multiple, literally flooding their timeline with this abuse. And the idea is to shut you up, basically, and to intimidate you off the platform. And you know, a form of canceling you off it, I guess. Also called brigading. So if you're ever familiar with that term, There's organizations that do that. You brigade, in other words, you rally a bunch of people that are ideologically committed to do this one thing. They've all agreed, let's retweet these links. Irrespective of argument, they'll just come in and slam you down. Major, major problem in every social network. How do you handle it? I actually don't know. And it's sadly enough down to the user, yourself, Joe, like to kind of create some sort of solution for yourself, which in your case is to sit on it and then get rid after a couple of hours.
Yeah, I mean, psychologically, I see it as graffiti. If it's the same as graffiti on a wall, if I'm driving on the street, I see graffiti. It's got hate. It's got a scream. It's shouting out of the world. And I just drive past thinking, well, you don't know me. You're not aiming it at me. You're just aiming it at the world like graffiti. So I just clean it off, delete it, move on. I don't see it as personal attack.
Any trends, Joe, in terms of where these people are based? I mean, are they in the UK or are they in different parts of the world?
I mean, this person, I believe, is UK-based, I believe. I mean, if you're talking about potentially people who are from the trans-critical movement, they can be from anywhere. Mm. A lot of people in the UK, a lot of organised people in the UK are doing it. But there's also a lot of foothold in the radical right of the US, you know, the Christian fundamentals, the hard right US kind of Bible Belt type influence, where some of the money's coming from.
Yeah, it's organized, and sadly enough, it doesn't have to be like organized in a militaristic way. It's like some investments, some support. I mean, there was a guy in the UK called Milo Yiannopoulos. I forget his name, but he was a newspaper person in the startup scene here in the UK. Fairly well received, liked, I think, at one point, but then suddenly he got veered off into hard right sort of. Pro Trump and all this kind of stuff, and he became this doyen of the right wing. And it's like, holy crap! Like, how did that happen? You know, he's literally transformed who the hell he is. And it's a career for some people now.
As you say, it's not just about money. These people have positions in the media outlets. They have legal barristers, solicitors. So when they want to defend a point, they can pile in with media, they can pile in with legal representation, they can put cease and desist, they can block, they can hold. And it's not just about cash. They have the people in their network to do this.
Joe, I don't want to kind of sort of go and put too much responsibility on you as the person receiving this. But what are the solutions here? I mean, how would you like to see things happen? What do you think is the best steps that platforms can take, or even other members if they see stuff like this?
I think the struggle with the report function, whether it's on LinkedIn, Facebook, or whatever, there's that fine free speech line about what is kind of an opinion, what is not harmful, and when it strays into be harmful. I don't think there's enough focus on the impact on the individual that's the target. How does that person feel? So it's often seen as, well, it's quite, people are quite willing to post this anti-trans rhetoric, for one of in this example, but the impact of that is it's propagating it, making it more socially acceptable. So the long-term impact is quite great. The microaggression may not be seen as that bad, but it's the bigger issue. The microaggression's mounting and becoming a pattern. So I think the trouble at the moment is it's either not that offensive or really offensive. There's no way of saying, well, it's a gateway to offense. There's no way of looking at it as a microaggression, because the algorithms, whoever's casually glancing, looks at it as one snapshot and says, well, that looks okay to me. Well, take that, and it's not okay. And I think that's the problem. There's no way of building a picture up and having it looked as a holistic kind of report. It's more or less like one of micro reports.
And I think also, maybe even for privacy reasons, it's difficult to trace persistent behavior. So I can imagine, for instance, there might be someone who episodically has a dispute with you, let's say, but it's like just a dispute. Maybe it gets heated. I had one today with a friend of mine who was quite heated on free speech. And he, you know, maybe is spending a bit of time away from having a chat with me for the time being. That's fine. I know we're going to get back. It's totally all cool. However, if there's a persistent pattern of behavior, like, for instance, this person may just consistently make it their job to be your nemesis, platform's got to take some responsibility there and knock this person out and get rid of that account. Go ahead, Am. You about to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, do we consider this behavior as worse more shocking, more reportable, whatever, if it's on LinkedIn versus other places? And if so, is that right? Should we? Question do, either Joe or Hung.
I've had it on both. Is it any different on either? I don't know. I think it's, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Instagram, LinkedIn, or other platforms, it's, to me, it's social media. It is, which publication it's on, it matters little as far as I'm concerned.
Right. I feel like there is a tendency to see something on LinkedIn and think that's more shocking if it's on LinkedIn than if you see it on Facebook or Twitter or something else.
On that note, Adam, I think you might be right in the sense that this LinkedIn's content, style of content, is narrower, generally speaking, even though we talked earlier about the fact it's becoming more social. What it is definitely not the case is that you're not sharing all sorts. It is still business orientated in a general degree. But what 2021 and 2020 has shown us is that we can't divorce the work life from society. You know, companies, employers, employees have deeply invested and deeply contributing to the societies that we're in. And that flow has, that division has always been false. Even more so now we're all working from home. So there's no way you can say this is a workspace and that's personal space, or leave your politics at home or whatever it is. We're in the mixer now. So, you know, we've got to deal with it. Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, one of the things I think the perception is, obviously it's different for different people, is that Facebook is your own wall. You can spray graffiti on your wall. You can say what you like on your wall. You kind of believe you know who your friends are. Whereas LinkedIn, you tend to come from an antagonistic business perspective. You're trying to post a challenge, you're trying to angle it that way. So whenever I write content on LinkedIn, I'm doing it from a different angle than I would do on Facebook. But you know, we've all got a broad network of friends on Facebook, and I've got people who are posting, as we all have, pro-Trump stuff that I find offensive, and in there it's racism, transphobia, homophobic comments, and I'm scrolling through some of this. It may not be the person I'm connected with, but one of their connections is then posting this toxicity within their wall. So I think, well, if they're prepared to host that, they're not prepared to stamp that out. I think you've got to own the fact it's your thread. You own the thread. If you're allowing that stuff to propagate, you're responsible.
Right.
And I've seen people who I consider my friends post stuff which I considered homophobic or transphobic. I pointed this out, and I ended up falling out with both of them because they both felt that I was policing them and telling them how to live and their language. And I said, well, hey, this is my perspective. If you don't like it, well, I'm out then.
Yeah,
I guess that's kind of the way it is. You know, I just remove people from my life that are posting stuff that I find offensive.
I resonate very much with this, because actually it's a very similar relationship conversation I had today. Because you know, I manage a group, Recruiting Brain Food, right? And sometimes things are posted there. I make it a rule not to be an active participant in the own group, because I see my role literally not to make opinions. My role is to try and allow other opinions to propagate. But what happens if an opinion is particularly harmful in that space? And today, someone posted something which another individual thought was extremely harmful. I decided not to change that and said, look, the person's made the argument, made the case. If there is an argument to be had, let's make that public and engage with that thing publicly. But perhaps I was wrong. Maybe I should have just gone ahead and deleted it. I don't know. It's like, how do I make that decision?
You've decided that you're not an editor, and that's probably the right thing for you.
There is a line, though. I mean, I'm clear on the line. Personal abuse, boom, it's gone. Definitely no go, right? No bueno. But where people are discussing things, in this case, it was about vaccination. And what was the right or wrong for a company to enforce vaccination policy? Now, one person made, I believe, an erroneous argument, but I thought he made it well to say it's not good that a company would enforce vaccine policy to employees, otherwise not allowed on site. That's the argument he made. I disagree with it, but I did not delete it or publicly disagree with it, because I didn't feel it was my role to do that. I was hoping for the conversation to evolve. But in response to that, I received a message from a good friend of mine who said, "Hung, you should have taken that down. It's harmful." And then I had a long debate as to why I didn't. And then, you know, I totally see his point of view. I get it. You've just mentioned also to me, Joe, in your own personal example, that maybe I do have a bigger responsibility to moderate harm. But my view on it is to say, for me to come in and like be an adjudicator on what's right or wrong will stop conversation from happening. It's almost like you don't want me
Isn't
to do that.
Isn't that the mood that Zuckerberg's being tarred with in saying, he's just saying, I just create the platform. I've got no control what you do. I'm not here to edit you or police you. And now we're saying, well, actually, maybe you have got responsibility, because if you're letting it pass on your watch by not doing anything, you're saying it's okay with me. Regardless of what you think about it, you're still saying it's okay.
It's exactly the Zuckerberg situation, Joe, and I defend Zuckerberg on that reason, because I think he is actually correct. Ultimately, the job of Facebook is to connect and allow communications to happen. And guess what? There's going to be a bunch of people that really are not your people. They're going to be not your people. That's a fact. The difficulty is, if you have a dominant sort of way of shifting a conversation to have certain things to be acceptable or not acceptable, that becomes a big challenge. This is the Robert Overton sort of concept of the Overton window, right? People should check that out. Like, when you change something from being taboo to non-taboo, how do you do that? Is it the right thing? And it goes left or right, how this window moves. And it's moved over in recent days with Trump coming in, for sure it has moved, but it's moved back the other way as well. So it's a constant conflict. Anyway, listen, Joe, I don't want to absorb too much more of your time because I know you're busy. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing with us this news. I'm going to bring on some more guests because we've got loads of people to talk to through this. So thank you so much, Joe. I'll share your link to everyone else. Joe Lockwood is a person you should chat to if you care about diversity and inclusion, folks. So make sure you check her out. Great to see you, Joe.
See you later. Bye.
Cool. I just noticed the time. We're really in the weeds with this one. We've got to move on real quick. Aaron, I'm going to bring you on in a sec. Give me a mo. I've got to find this lady here. Iptahal, yes, sir. I finally discovered who you are. Found you. All right, let's bring you on. I'm going to bring on Aaron as well. I'm also going to bring on. Good Lord. I'm going to see if Amy can come on as well. Why not? Let's see if this happens. It's tough. I mean, I don't think there's a clear answer. I don't have the answer. What I do know, though, is that there's a lot of bad intent out there, and we need to eliminate the bad intent. So we've got some new guests. Let's do some intros. Erin, do you want to go ahead first?
Yeah, I'm Erin Matthew. I am the talent sourcing manager at Maxar Technologies and a past guest on Brain Food a couple of times.
Amazing. And I'm pleased to see that's like now become one of your titles, you know, a guest on Brain Food. We've made it as a show, if you say that. Okay, cool. And how about you, Iptahal? I don't think we've actually had the chance to meet, but great to converse with you on LinkedIn. Great to hear and see you here. Can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, and what it is you do?
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much for having me today. It's a great experience. So my name is Iptahal. I'm a senior talent acquisition professional, and I'm working currently with Scout24.
Ah, cool. Yeah, in Berlin, right?
Yes, in Berlin.
Amazing, amazing stuff. Okay, so this is a tough topic, obviously. And, you know, we wanted to try and surface up experience that other people have on LinkedIn, particularly people, you know, from my side, I'm a guy, you know, Adam's a guy. We probably don't see a lot of this negativity. I haven't. Like I say, it's been fairly vanilla. But I wanted to just understand from your experience, dark side of LinkedIn, behaviors you've encountered that is, you know, unpleasant and more regular than it should be. Let's go with you first, Erin, on this.
So before I get into any of my experiences, I would be remiss not to give a shout out to someone on LinkedIn who is actively combating things like trolls and bullies. If you don't follow Madison Butler, you should. She does some really amazing work in helping startups to go well past diversity in terms of representation. She encourages them to build safe and equitable workplaces for Black people of color and members of the LGBT community. And because of that, she gets more hate than you could ever imagine. And because of that, she was inspired to create a foundation called Rage to Rainbows with Emily Weltman, also a fantastic person to follow. But it's essentially a platform where when you get insulted on LinkedIn for any reason, you can make a donation in that person's name to a social justice group, an LGBTQ group, and essentially the the theory is don't hate, donate. And so far they have reported over 12,000 donations that have been reported because of LinkedIn insults. So I had to give a shout out to that.
Wonderful. That's amazing. And by the way, I love that thing. I mean, if you find the link to that foundation or NGO, there we go. Thank you very much, Aaron. I was going to say great share. Okay, give me some bad dark side, Aaron, without obviously, you know, anything you want to avoid talking about, please don't feel the need to do so. But what have you encountered on LinkedIn that you think other people need to know about?
So I think that we're pretty attuned to the things that are very in your face and pretty indisputable as being trolling and bullying. But sometimes it can happen very subtly over time. And then by the time that you recognize it, it's almost too late to shut it down before it gets to be an issue. And unfortunately, I've been dealing with something of that nature for pretty much the last year. And the harassment kind of started out as disguised as constructive criticism over any blogs that I would write for SourceCon or, you know, anytime that I would be giving a webinar. But when I really examined it, I'd look at it and I'd say, this guy isn't trying to help me. He's not trying to give constructive criticism. He's trying to discredit and embarrass me. And, you know, like I've been conditioned to do as a woman, I would laugh it off. I would take it in stride. And I would just keep pushing it off and pushing it off. And then, you know, my life on LinkedIn and Facebook have kind of coincided quite a lot since I've gotten involved with the sourcing community, because a lot of those people have become my friends. But then this guy's harassment started creeping into my posts on Facebook. You know, I couldn't post any food that I made without him mansplaining it in some way, which was just very odd. But then what really started to get to me was, you know, a lot of people who know me know that I do pole fitness as a hobby. I've never hid that. I don't care who knows about it. It's, you know, it's a fun activity. I love it. But I know the difference when a man thinks less of me because of it. And, you know, it came to my attention this summer that at a conference that I was speaking at, there was a happy hour that was going on, like a virtual happy hour. And I got texts from people saying, hey, this person saying that you should come on screen and pole dance for everyone. And just looking back at my other interactions with him, it really skeeved me out.
So I've got an immediate question about this, Aaron, because the guy's following you about different social networks, criticizing you for different things. Why do you block him?
He has since been blocked, and it all came to a head this weekend. Wow. So I finally had it out with him. I outlined everything that was, like, you know, just really, you know, getting under my skin and everything like that. You think I got an apology? No, not really. I got paragraphs and paragraphs of justification for, you know, whatever in his mind was okay. But what really bothered me was when it started to spill over to my husband. Like, I would make dinner, post it, and the creepiest comment that I got was, well, I hope she's working her husband out to the same intensity level as her pole videos. Otherwise, she's going to be married to a roly-poly before she knows it. I said, it's not polite to talk about other people's bodies on social media.
Was that a public comment?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I didn't get an apology. He deleted the comment and left me alone for a couple of weeks. Then he came back. And essentially, when it went to private message, his justification was, well, you can't keep posting these, you know, dozens and dozens of desserts that you said are not for sale. So I only made the logical conclusion, what, that I'm eating a dozen donuts every week and I couldn't possibly be sharing them with my neighbor? I don't know. But anyways, I got paragraphs and paragraphs of justification and, you know, explaining why it was okay that he said that. And then, like, I'm sorry if you were offended. So that's when I just said, this is useless. I can't put any energy into this. So he's been blocked on every platform.
Yeah, I just want to make a quick point, because Amy's comment is, let's not ruin his life by talking about it, right? This is the thing. Somebody sends you a message and says, you look nice. Somebody fucking trolls you like that. That's just not the same thing. Aaron's got absolutely trolled and got real abuse, and that is fair. If Aaron was, you know, felt like sharing that everywhere, that would be absolutely, you know, right. But there's got
to be. Adam, here's why I didn't. Here's why I didn't, Adam. I'm still afraid of the fact that the guy's a big name in my industry.
It would
do more harm to me than it would to him. That's the problem.
That's why I let it go on for so long. Yeah, I need to just say, you mean, why didn't you block him? That would be the logical thing, but there's consequences to blocking people sometimes.
Yeah.
Particularly, exactly. If they're like heavily embedded or enmeshed in a certain community of power. Like, part of the communities I've been in, part of the reason why Brain Food, my relationship with it is hands off in the sense I'm not active there. It's because I don't want to build those relationships. Because I don't want to be an important person there. Because you find yourself in a position of power that you don't deserve. And if people start being afraid of you because of the consequences of action, consequences of falling out with someone, that's actually very, very dangerous. So Aaron, I want to thank you for sharing that. That sounds like a disturbing scenario. I do hope that it's gone away. I do want to explore exactly how we can do something about it. What can be done at platform level, at member level, and all those types of things. So stay with us on this topic here. But let's bring it to you, Ibtihal. When we were talking on LinkedIn, you mentioned that this is also something you were very familiar with, unfortunately, negative commentary, negative messaging. I wonder whether you could share some of your experience with us here.
Yes, actually, the thing is, actually listening to such perspectives is really, really actually an eye-opener at the moment, because sometimes you feel that you don't want to act on things because, you know, this is too much. I'm overreacting and then stuff like that. But to be very honest, me personally, I was actually having such bad communication or interaction whenever I have to conduct workshops for, let's say, students in boot camps. Usually you try to guide them through how they can land bad jobs actually in the market, how they can make sure that the hiring process is free and so on and so forth. And I sometimes was like really stunned that some people would get into my messages and start mansplaining. So basically, no, what you have actually discussed at that workshop doesn't make any sense, because as a hiring manager, I would say that, you know, if the candidate, if the hiring manager liked the candidate, they would give them clue on the answers. I was like, why actually you have been just, you know, trying to guide me through something that I am actually helping people with in a way, like, you know, being not just only he was being aggressive in that workshop and tried to create this conflict, but he took that into my messages as well. And it was like, okay, now you have done that twice. And at some point I just like, it was getting into me through the weekend. And then I was like, okay, let's just get it away. Delete that message, block that guy. But it happens a lot sometimes when they are opposed with a different opinion and they try to actually just mansplain you. This is actually not happening in the market, and this is what you should have been saying to the students, for example. And yeah, so I would say this was a bit harsh because not only and then in front of the students, I try to just make sure that they understand that this is their right to understand that the recruitment process should not be, or the decision should not be, upon the chemistry between you and the hiring manager. It's rather about you as a qualification and what you are bringing to the table. What is your background? What is your qualifications as well?
Thank you for that, Ibtihal. As I understand it, basically you were doing a workshop. There was an individual in the workshop that publicly undermined your teaching. And then later on, trying to reinforce that situation in a private message to you. Yeah,
exactly. I get it. Okay.
No, I want to continue because you mentioned the word mansplaining. Why did you use that term? And do you think this is a gender thing, or was it something else?
So for him, it was like more of forcing. So even after the conflict happened, the workshop, he actually took this this decision to be on my DMs and try to guide me through what he's thinking again. And this is the right thing. It's not just like, you know, this is my opinion, but this is the right thing actually to do, is let them actually give that chemistry between them and the future hiring managers, for example, instead of, you know, just sharing their technical perspective or their qualifications or their skills. And I found that really something, I would say, unacceptable, because, you know, conflicts or different opinions, they are there already. So you can actually just gently share your opinion on a subject, or, you know, oppose other receivers, but you don't have to explain or to guide them to something that is not right from their specialty as well.
I think I know what's happened here. Basically, this dude has not accepted your sort of teaching, and then saw it as his responsibility not only dispute that, but also then to say, hey, this is how you should do it. So this is a classic definition of mansplaining, really.
Exactly.
You know, there couldn't be a more canonical example of that. And again, it's not your responsibility to have to deal with it, but as a human being, you have to deal with it just to prepare, just to, you know, protect yourself in this scenario. Mm-hmm. How did you go ahead and deal with this, Ibtihar?
As I have said, it was a bit hard when I have actually received this message in my DMs, and I was like, should I actually just explain that this is unacceptable for me to receive such messages and such context, because I am open to receive a feedback. This is something that we all actually need in order to enhance and in order to become better. But it was not in that context, which is, for me, it was comfortable. So I let it be there actually for just like 2 days. It was just through the weekend, and I just deleted that message and blocked the person, even without explaining why I have done that, because I don't owe them actually this explanation.
Yep.
At some point, I was like, even guiding them through that, they will not see the things that they don't understand in terms of expertise, because he is trying to put something from his experience as a hiring manager and something for like talent acquisitions professionals to understand, but he's trying just to force that.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying, Ibtihar. I want to bring Amy on at this point, because I've just noticed this is obviously a 20-hour show. This should be a conference, really, because we're running so far out of time. We've actually lost Lynn. But I want to bring Amy on together with us, because she's got something interesting to say about what you do. I mean, again, we have multiple people saying block them. And that seems to be actually, I hope the guys don't mind me saying, that seems to be a male default to say, why don't you just block them? Which, you know, that seems to be very a male response. But we've got a lot of women here that are saying, hang on, it's not, why should I have to do this? And Amy, you've mentioned that you know, there's an accountability issue there as well. But before we kind of bring you into that comment, always you got to introduce yourself, Amy, because I got to share your link to your profile. So who are you and what is you too?
I'm Amy Miller. I am a technical recruiter in Seattle. It is stupid early on the West Coast, I just want y'all to know. But I'm awake now. Oh, I'm awake now.
Oh my goodness, what have we done? What have we done? The volcano is erupting. Have you always been there? Have I got you wrong? Have you moved?
Yeah, I've been here off and on for about 30 years. So yeah, right, as long as you've known me. I've been here. Okay. So I've worked in big tech. I compete with Aaron trying to find space nerds, building satellites. It's hard.
You've had a lot of things to say, Amy, on this.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for these contributions on the chat stream. It's really interesting. Let's zoom down on this idea of blocking someone. So I've received a terrible message. You know what, Hung, why don't you just block them? Fine. Okay, yeah. Maybe I would do that.
Yeah.
But you're saying that actually, no, that's not necessarily the right thing to do.
Here's why this gives me pause. Okay, because, you know, am I asking for it by being available to you, by having a public profile? By virtue of existing on the internet, you're welcome to come into my inbox with whatever you want to say, anything from hey, beautiful to something incredibly inappropriate. And the onus is on me to not wear a skirt. Oh, no, I mean, I'm sorry, not allow you access to my profile. That's what you're saying. That's what our daughters are hearing.
So, okay, I get that. And I want to just tease this out a bit further, Amy, right? So you're saying that this should not be your responsibility. I would imagine most people listening or just thinking about it just a little bit further would understand that to be the case. So in other words, you have a bad actor performs action A, which is bad. The onus should be action of the actor not to do action A. You know, why should I have to, why should I have to modify my behavior to do this? And by the way, folks, the when you say just block somebody, there's actually like a longer tail impact on this. So I had, when I launched this idea of a show, there was a bunch of people that emailed me to say, Hung, I ain't going to come on because I still feel vulnerable. And actually I've decreased my LinkedIn activity because of that sense of vulnerability hasn't gone away despite the fact they've done this blocking. So it's the block itself is, I would say, for sure, a hygiene factor you should do for yourself. But let's not forget there's like a long-term impact on how this, how negative this could be. This person is a recruiter and she's had to withdraw from LinkedIn. She doesn't feel comfortable because of some experience that she's had on the platform. That's a terrible scenario.
I just want to address something that Lee has said. I'm going to give them an opportunity to let me show them who they are. Because if you think I haven't used my sorcerer skills to look up people's wives, moms, and girlfriends and send them screenshots, you don't know me at all. It is not on me to remove myself from a public situation so that somebody else doesn't get their rocks off. I will call it out all day, every day. I don't care if it's trolling. I don't care if it's an innocent, hey, beautiful, because I'm unhappy and I want to go flirt with a stranger. I don't care. It is not on me to protect you.
Okay, hold on, Amy. I've got a couple of questions about this because I want to understand, because I haven't ever had this, anybody messaging me with things. So I just don't understand. Couple of quick
questions. So believe us when we tell you we don't like it.
That's the thing. Like, we're telling you our experience. We're telling you the things that your wives and your girlfriends are going to go through, and your daughters.
I'm not the enemy. I'm not sending people messages saying these things, right? So that's first of all. Just because I'm a man doesn't mean I'm doing this, because that's the way that I'm feeling that you're talking to me here.
So we're asking that you believe us. We're asking you that you stop putting the ownership on us to deal with it. And we're asking you to stop saying like, oh, just block the guy. You should actually say, that sucks. You shouldn't have to deal with that. What can I do?
Okay.
Yeah. How can I support you?
How can I support you?
The first question is there no shades of gray in this at all? There's a comment from, I think the term you used was like, hey, beautiful. There's that through to like, I don't know, something overtly sexual. They are to be treated entirely the same way. Is that
they're
right?
They're very gray. They're it's all gray. Okay. I don't think any of this is purely black and white. Here's the thing. And I said this in the comment section, there should be no expectation of privacy between strangers. I don't care what the platform is. I don't care if it's private messaging. I don't care if it's Tinder. I don't care if it's LinkedIn. I don't care. There is no social contract that exists that says a complete stranger owes you anonymity. So if a complete stranger sends me a message that says, hey, beautiful, and I don't like it because I get to make that rule for myself, what I'll accept and not accept. And if I share that, your first reaction was you could ruin this person's life and get them fired. I don't care. Do not send me a message that you are not comfortable with me sharing publicly.
So everything gets treated exactly the same.
Yes,
if you don't like it, everything gets treated. Exactly.
I would agree with Amy, because the thing is, you have to put yourself in the others. So basically, for me, I'm not comfortable to get any kind of comments, whether it's like on that extreme or whether it's like just hi, beautiful. This is for me. It's not acceptable. And also, it really varies on the person themselves, actually. So at the end of the day, this is their right, how they are dealing with that situation, because they are not comfortable. So no one can judge whatever reaction they are taking. So if they want to go as extreme as calling them out, they can do. as much as just blocking them. There is no right and wrong in terms of reaction. Right.
I just want to add, Adam, if the comment is so benign and so innocent, what difference does it make if it gets blasted on social media?
Well, no, but it's not quite as straightforward as that. Sorry, at the risk
isn't
of
it?
Guys, one thing we can't do is shout over each other, okay? Simply because no one can hear what's going on. So I think if people are going to say something and you've said it, then let's have the other person sort of respond to that. Otherwise, we're not going to go too far with this exercise, which, by the way, everyone who's taking part in the show is trying to understand better than others. None of us, I would hope, are guilty of these types of behaviors. We're just trying to uncover what's going on. Okay, listen, I'm going to bring on Susanna because we have literally running out of time and we just need to keep doing this. Let's make sure Susanna comes on. As she's doing that, Adam, you were about to say something about shades of grey. Was that right?
All I was going to say was, and I'm not saying I'm disagreeing with anybody here, Amy. I'm not saying I'm disagreeing with you here. I just want to understand, because this is why I'm approaching this by asking questions, because I don't understand looking at it, somebody says one thing that's, they probably wouldn't want their girlfriend to see it versus saying something that is just absolutely obscene. I just wanted to understand. These things should be treated in exactly the same way.
If they should be treated however the recipients feel is appropriate. I wouldn't personally, hey, beautiful. Look, I'm 46 years old. I don't get that a lot, okay? So that is not going to offend me the way that it might, a younger woman who's getting it 5 or 10 times a day. Okay. I've been at this a long time. I've got a pretty thick skin. My concern here, Adam, and what I hope we can both come away from this conversation with is that we're asking you to be on our side. We're asking you to please not put the onus on us to block. That's just like saying, hey, don't wear that outfit because you're asking for it. That's exactly what that sounds like to us. It's what it sounds like to our daughters. I have two daughters that are getting to this age now where they're starting to address this. That is why I speak up about it so often and so loudly, because I have two girls to protect.
Sure. At the risk of, I don't want to be.
We are going. We are going.
Really quick thing. Really
Adam,
quick thing.
We're going to move on because literally we're way past time. One thing I will say before we introduce Susanna on this is that I think the reaction to say just block is very, very important to really sit down on and think about, because number one, I think it's something that people should do for their own mental health. This is what you need to do. Get rid of people out of your lives as best you can. That's a yes. But the onus should not be on the person to do that. And it's not a solution. I think what I'm hearing from the conversation here, when the response is, hey, why don't you just do that? It kind of suggests that the person who is the victim of some of this sort of harassment is somehow responsible for fixing it. That shouldn't be the case. We need to have a wider sort of understanding as to the impacts of these types of dialogue online. To your point, Adam, yes, there is a big variety of there's a big sort of spectrum of activity between stuff that is like totally illegal to stuff that is clumsy and stupid. I think we can recognize that. But at the same time, we all need to kind of elevate and think, you know what? Just have a think about what the receiver might be experiencing from all of this, which is the reason why this show is here, by the way. It's not necessarily to produce solutions, because I do suspect we're not going to be able to do that in the course of this type of show. It's simply to say, can we listen to other voices and understand that experience? And from that, maybe that's like an incremental step forward. Okay, let's go to you, Susanna. Welcome to the show. I believe this is your debut, so great to have you here. Can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Yes, I'm Susanna, and I'm a super sorcerer, and I'll leave it at that.
That's all you need to know. Check out Susanna. By the way, Susanna is a tremendously good tweeter, particularly for like little snippets of information. You're one of the rare recruiters that actually is really good at sharing like interesting stuff on Twitter. So
it's automated.
That's Robo Susanna is all good with me. So Susanna asked you to come onto the show because actually you had a very recent experience of this, and you you know, talked about this online. You and I sort of had some dialogue on it. Can you just explain exactly sort of how you felt when this, what it was and how you felt when you received this message?
Yeah, so just to clarify, this situation compared to the rest of the messages I get is nothing. So for whatever reason, I chose to share this particular one. But for those of y'all that aren't familiar with the situation, I have it right in front of me. I received an in-mail from the Dean of Georgia Tech. And it said, you have a great recruiting background. Is there strong baby girl demand for data science in Louisville, which is where I live? And that was it. And for one, he had to have looked at my profile in order to see that I was exclusively a data science recruiter living in Louisville. But where did this whole like baby girl terminology come from? I don't know. So I pulled the audience on Facebook, of course, in the unprofessional LinkedIn group. And that led me down a little bit of a rabbit hole to figure out who the heck is this guy. Gave it a quick Google. Well, first off, I did accept his friend request or his LinkedIn request for networking before I got his in-mail. And so I had his personal email address. Well, I Googled his personal email address. And the second search result was his profile on oldgaymen.com. And he was 71 years old. Did another Google. He's married with two kids. His wife is a lawyer. Blah, 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 blah. So I haven't done anything about it. I haven't responded. But, yeah, just kind of gave me a what the heck sort of a feeling.
Do you think – so firstly, when we started the show, we talked about identity fraud as being part of the problem sometimes because there's going to be like – it's as I think someone mentioned on the chat just there, it's like – easily just to create an account and like use it as a trolling account. I'm sure there's people actually that do this. Yeah. So but in this case, this ID verification, you know who this person is. There was no sort of attempt to disguise it. This is just a person. This is the ID of the person. They sent you this message. And you're still deciding on a response. Is that right?
So I'll throw this out there to y'all since we're all friends here, right? My husband and I really disagree when it comes to responding to these sorts of messages. I do share them with him, like, oh, babe, look at what I got today. He's like, oh, well, here's how you should respond. But he tells me don't respond because all they want is a response. And if I do respond, I'm like, what the heck, you know, like, fuck you, basically. He's like, Susanna, that's baiting them. So, again, we really disagree on this. But for this one, since it is out there in the public, this particular in mail, I have not responded because my husband would get very mad.
You know what? That's quite interesting that there is a male-female division of in terms of how best to respond, right? I think a great deal of this, I wonder whether part of this might be, firstly, males don't experience this type of thing, so they don't know, you know, how it works. So there's an ignorance aspect. 100%. But there may also be perhaps a deeper, some weird understanding of male psychology, I wonder. Whether some guys, like maybe like Lee saying, let's block it. And I've advocated blocking. Why? Maybe because there's like, we kind of get it that there's some people just like, they need to be fed. The trolls that are being fed, the worst thing you can do is interact.
I did have one really good response that I have to share with you guys. And this was all by myself. I didn't like pull the audience as to what I should respond, but I met a guy at a networking event that my company was hosting. And he sends me an invitation to connect with an in-mail that says, you know, would love to take you out for drinks. I'll pick you up in my whatever hotshot car. And he kept going on and on about his car. And I responded, well, does your car have room in the back seat for my kids' car seats? And and I never heard from him again. Yes. Yeah, so a little snarky, but I think I got my point across.
Yeah, I think so. There's definitely, oh man, there's just too much to talk about. There really is. It's the worst, the more we talk with you guys, I'm more thinking what a cesspool this is. I'm going to delete my LinkedIn account.
We're swimming in it, Hung. We are literally swimming in it.
I have to say one thing, Hung. When I hear someone say just block them, it feels like a continuation of the same advice that I was given as a child for bullies. Just ignore them. Or even worse, oh, that boy is just picking on you because he likes you.
We're conditioned this way from a very early age.
So
that's why it's so
doesn't surprise me because I don't like him.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that women end up in abusive relationships when we're taught that it's okay for them to be mean to you when you're like five.
So I have one more if you don't mind. Okay. So I never responded to this guy. And this is over the course of 2.5 years. Okay. You have very pretty eyes. Your posts always inspire me to stay optimistic. How are you? Happy Thanksgiving. Happy birthday. And then, sorry if I treated you like a sex object early on. You were very attractive.
Great apology there.
Well, all right. So, you know, I'm thinking all kinds of thoughts here. And you'll forgive me if I say things that are just in my head at this point, right? But I'm going to throw it out there because this the story that you mentioned here, just remind me, what if this – so you get a bunch of people that obviously have different abilities or communication standards or emotional intelligence, let's say. We all care about things like neurodiversity, for instance. We all care about, like, yes, different people behave in different ways. I just wonder, all right, what if you do have a situation where someone who is literally just very, very incompetent at – controlling their ability to have conversation, they make you uncomfortable that way. I've got a friend whose brother is this way, actually. Makes me super uncomfortable. He's a very large individual. He doesn't know how to behave in a social way, and he's prone to do things, that I would say physically a very, very difficult or challenging for anybody to handle, right? It's like, okay, what's happening with this? This guy could break my neck kind of thing. But at the same time, I'm thinking, all right, this person is obviously not in, you know, he's mentally ill. He's got some illness issues there. And I have to be sensitive to this, even though I have to protect myself and people around me, but I have to be sensitive to the fact that this individual, in many regards is either unconscious of their behavior or not able to control that behavior. Like, is this something worth talking about here? Is this like part of this? Maybe this. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, that's a big challenge. It is a problem. If somebody's sending, I mean, some of the things that Susanna just talked about that she's been receiving from people, some of those kind of messages don't sound like they're from somebody that is like, they sound like they've got some problems.
Can I just say it is not lost on the three women in this room that we keep going back to, but what about the guy? What if he has this thing or that thing or a girlfriend or a job and we could just ruin it all? Why do we keep going back to that conversation? I'm asking to understand, Adam.
Yeah, I'm not trying to defend anybody here because there are clearly a lot of...
No, we got that. We feel no defense.
Look, Amy, I need to say this because I was the one that introduced this idea with the kind of anticipation that we might get this type of reaction, which I didn't intend. It simply came to my mind, particularly because I have this personal sort of understanding with this person in my own life, that there are individuals out there that are not able to control how they behave. Now, all right, your answer may be, let's get them off the platform, let's delete them, let's get that. I get it, but LinkedIn doesn't do that. It literally allows anybody to sign up. So is part of what we need to do as a platform is to advocate for some sort of way to verify people's ID or to have some sort of way in which, how do we fix it? It's not a case where, I mean, I don't want to say we're going to be able to do this in the course of this conversation. But I just wanted to try and figure out, okay, is there a way that we can actively help reduce these behaviors, change sort of these experiences? And how do we do that? I mean, I think the platform's got to do something, I guess.
I'm not asking for you to police anyone else's behavior either. I'm not suggesting that there's, LinkedIn or you or any other platform content owner is responsible for policing it on our behalf. That's not at all what I think any of us are saying. What we are asking for and what I think is missing is we're asking for you guys to just trust and believe us and stand up for us in the moment. That's it. If you see it happening or if we call it out or we share a screenshot, and I've been on the receiving end of this too, we'll share a screenshot. And it's immediately, oh man, I can't believe they actually shared that. That's really, not appropriate. Like the onus all of a sudden comes onto us to be pleasing, to protect people who are offending us. We're not asking you to take crazy, you know, out there efforts to keep people off the platform. We're just asking you to, when it does happen, when it does come up, just maybe come sit on our side for a bit and ask how you can support. And I'll leave it there. I've said a lot already.
And not even just that. Just don't make excuses. That's it. Don't make excuses for the person that is doing this. That's it. I mean, even if you don't do anything else, it costs you $0 to not post something making an excuse for that person. That alone goes a long way.
Let's thanks for that, guys. I just want to go to the questions real quick, because again, we are gonna close this show very shortly, but I want to reach these questions. So this is to the crowd. This is from Nadia Massarelli. Nadia said, what is the best way of handling people who have inappropriate behavior comments publicly? Do you respond politely at first, or would you wait until blocking that person? So this is not DM stuff. This is not like direct messaging. This is maybe you've posted something, they've responded to it. So the Joanne Lockwood scenario, they've done it like publicly. How would you recommend dealing with it? So any thoughts on this?
Anyone? Probably, I don't have the balls to do that, to be honest, which that's probably not a good term to use right now, the balls, but I don't.
I do.
I know.
but again, that's why I'm often the target of, you know, stuff like this, because I've all of my field of F's is barren. I don't care. I have daughters. I don't care.
Just ping me or Amy and we'll do it for you.
Okay. So we basically don't know, Nadia. However, I think different people are going to behave in different ways on that one. Okay. Last question. This is from Stephen Rothberg. Please ask your three brilliant, passionate guests if they want us attendees to do in order to be part of the solution. So I think what Steve's saying is, okay, something's happened. Let's say the public example again, it's posted, someone's commented inappropriately, whatever that is. What should people watching or being part of that public space do? What would you think is the right thing to have happen there? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think Annette just said it. I mean, just support us. Like, we're just asking you to just say, can you tell me more about how that felt? You know, what can I do to support you? What, you know, sometimes we just need like to feel like you're on our side, because we feel like we're defending ourselves against the good and the bad. I know you both are stand-up gentlemen. I wouldn't be here on the show with you if I didn't find value in spending time with you. But I don't feel like you're on my side on this. That's hard.
Okay, I need to step back on that and say, Amy, I'm sorry you feel that way, but I'm pretty certain that we are absolutely on your side on it. It is the case. The reason why this show was set up is because of messages I've received from other people that have told me, hey, this is happening, and I thought I needed to use this platform in order to expose it, even though this is not something I was personally aware of. So I would want to communicate and underline to you that, of course, I am on your side on this. And, you know, if that's not been made clear through some of the questions or the way in which I've tried to have a conversation around it, then obviously that's a learning opportunity for me. But like I say, I just wanted to reassure you that that's the situation as it is. So in any case, go ahead, Adam.
What Hung just said entirely applies to me as well, but I am feeling like I'm not even sure how to respond, or because everything I'm saying is not coming, is not landing very well. So
I think I know I'll probably, the feeling.
I think that
we have so much in common, Adam.
it's very difficult if you're, and this is, you know, I'm being genuine. I want to understand better, because this is why the concept that we'll just block them, because I have done that. I mean, I've only probably about two people, but I've never got the messages that you have ever got. I've never got anything like the kind of treatment that you've had. So I just simply would never know unless I listen. And that's why it's important for people like me to ask questions and understand and listen.
I appreciate that
you're willing to, you know, try and see things from our perspective. That's the most important thing, Adam. So,
That's great stuff. Well, listen, everybody, we've like gone well over time on this, but it does feel like there's so much more to talk about on this on this topic. Your online behavior, we're all like very much digitally enabled these days. It's impossible to just take yourself away from it. Like I say, I'm just thinking of this person who I don't even know. They messaged me to say I've had to leave LinkedIn. And that just strikes me as she's damaged her career by doing that, because how can you even recruit, you know, by feeling this way? And I just think, okay, we need to explore this more. We need to keep learning more. We need to get more voices on stage and talk and listen from different angles. So definitely, I think a part two is on the way. I'd love for everyone to come back to this if you're happy to do so. I think this is like an important topic to talk about. Anyway, that's it for this show, folks. Thank you so much to our guests. I will send everyone connections to all of these people. So make sure that you follow all of our amazing guests today. We will be back with you next week. Cool. I don't even know what we're talking about. Bring the kids
home problems.
Bring the kids in. That's all good, Amy.
Hey, she can tell you about some bullying in high school. It'd be great.
Bring the kids in. So next week, I think we're talking about employer branding in a remote only environment. So does it still matter? I mean, now we're all working from home. Is employer branding always located to the office? Because what is the difference if I'm sitting in the same seat working for company A compared to company B? So this will be a very exciting topic. Make sure you follow the channel and register for the show. Big thanks to our sponsors again, Kelly Services, RPO, Recruitment Services, Business Intelligence, Talent Intelligence Business. If you're operating an enterprise, make sure you check them out. Okay, everybody. Thank you to our guests. Thank you for watching. We will be back next week.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Cool. Wow, what an interesting show. I hope everyone got a bit of value from that conversation. I mean, so important we talk about all of these things. And I do thank all of the guests for sharing their thoughts. I am tempted to do another one of these shows. I think we've got so much more to explore, as a matter of fact. So I probably will do that. And I will let you know when that happens. Okay, that's about it. Have a good weekend, everybody.